free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.
Hi guys, and welcome to episode 33 of Chronically Christy. And today we have the lovely Steph with us. You'd like to say hello?
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. Hello. So, Steph, should we get straight into it? Would you like to tell us about your CKD journey?
I will. I'll try and cut a long story short. So my kidneys failed when I was 19, and it was really, really sudden. I just started blowing up like a balloon. Didn't know what was going on, and then they just went. And initially, the diagnosis was nephritis. So I had my first transplant from my dad. I'd done peritoneal dialysis, which is not my favourite. And then had kidney off my dad, which seemed to be like a perfect match. And then that failed for reasons unknown. So I'd got a bit of a fever, went into the hosie. They tried to sort it out and they couldn't. And the transplant surgeon at the time was Professor Sells. So he was baffled and a bit upset. And my mum was a match as well. So 9 months later, I had a transplant from her.
How old are you by this point?
21.
Right, okay.
21. And that lasted, I think, 9 months, but the whole time it was just not 100%, wasn't feeling that great. So again, it just confused them, and that was after food poisoning. So in the end, they sent me to haematology, and after kind of, I was on dialysis for 8 years at Warrington, at the satellite unit there, just doing hemo, so in the arm. They realised that it was a weird blood condition, AHUS. So it's like something a child normally has.
I have heard of it.
Which made sense, yeah. So they diagnosed that and decided that warfarin might do the trick, or Fragmin. So once they'd made the sort of diagnosis, they put me back on the list. During the time that I'd been dialysing, I was doing other things, but yeah, went back on the list and got a third transplant. And with that, I sold what I'd been doing and I went abroad for 3.5 years, and then the kidney failed again. And they decided that it just, warfarin didn't do the trick. It wasn't just blood thinning that they needed to do. It was something to stop the AHUS kind of, anything triggers it. So food poisoning, fever.
Oh, really? And what happens when it's triggered? Do you just get blood clots?
Everywhere, throwing up blood. Blood comes out of every face. And you're
Oh, dear.
I was in Lisbon, and at the airport, they sort of wheeled me in and then waved me off. And it was December 2010 when all the planes were cancelled. And so I was in the hospital, sorry, in the airport with shades on, wobbling around, looking like Bono. Just really looking drunk, and I couldn't see. And so I rung my mum and just went, blah, blah, blah. And then blood everywhere. So the hospital sort of team, or whatever you want to call them at the airport, were very good and just took me to a hospital in Lisbon. So it failed there. They were amazing. But yeah, it just attacks every organ. So it starts clotting your lungs, starts clotting everywhere. But they sorted that out in Portugal and then shipped me back to Liverpool. And then back on hemo, but I decided to go on home hemo, and it suited me better. After a while, after, you know, quite a lot of training and highs and lows and such, I went on home hemo, and that suited me a lot better. But yeah, it was another 7 years before they got a particular drug authorised, eculizumab, that I got it every fortnight. They've changed it now, slightly different drug, to every 8 weeks, Revlimid. And so every 8 weeks, they come, takes an hour at home, do a drip, and fingers crossed it's lasted over 6 years, and it seems to be all right. Same as, you know, function-wise, it's okay. Little niggles here and there, but yeah, so essentially that is the kidney journey with, you know, fucking, well, clots in the grafts and all this, the usual stuff. And like you're saying, low blood pressure for months and things like that. The ins and outs of kidney failure that everybody with kidney failure gets and understands. So it's not a straight road, even when you've got a kidney transplant, and especially
it's a proper
not when you're
roller coaster, isn't it? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I'll be fine now. People get saying to me, oh, they've restarted your kidney. I haven't restarted my kidney. But it's just.
Yeah. Oh, you're cured now. Are you better now? You've had a cure. You've cured. And you're like, oh, God.
Yeah. No more transplants or doctors or anything. No, it's one of those. It's a kind of a case of. Why should you understand? But it's really irritating that you don't.
Yeah, it's quite frustrating, isn't it?
25 years.
Yeah.
So it's one of those. So that's that.
So we'll start at the beginning then.
Yeah.
with the questions. So you had your mum, your dad and your mum's kidneys.
I did.
How did they find all of the testing and stuff?
Dad was fine. He didn't find it much of an issue. After the kidney transplant, I think he took 4 weeks off. They gave him 7 and he was fine after 4. So he was just wandering around and he was pretty good. My mum, she got a hernia after it. So she had to have that, you know, if you call it. And she probably found it a little bit more disruptive and a little bit more invasive and a little bit more... Dad, it's like it never happens, you know what I mean? Never had any trouble. But I think she's unfortunately, she's suffered from this hernia that they just can't patch anymore. So it's a bit more visible to her than anybody else.
Oh, that's always the way with everything, isn't it?
Yeah,
always the way, yeah. I had a scan recently that said I've got about 1 million hernias, but they're all on the inside. So that leave them alone. Leave them alone. Don't, if it's not causing problems, don't poke it.
That's always the best way. I've argued with doctors over it and said, I don't care. It looks horrible. And then they've just been like, listen.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what scan I have. They're like, do you know, you've got a gallstone. And no more. Yeah, it's Gary. Leave him. Gary the gallstone. If you poke him, he'll cause problems. Just leave him to do what he's doing. So.
It's a dangerous game.
Oh, yeah. So you did dialysis more than once.
I did peritoneal dialysis with the bags, and I also, the second time, I did it overnight.
And peritoneal didn't agree with you?
No. So the first time was all right with the bags, but I didn't do it for that long, maybe like a year. And then the overnight one, I did it, and then like 2 years, but it was in the end, I was having to do it for 10 hours a night. It just wasn't working, wasn't taking fluid off, making me feel sick, dragging really badly. And it sort of confirmed that it wasn't actually dialyzing me properly. So I went on to hemo, and that was a massive relief, even though I had resisted hemo. I don't know why, just because.
Well, it's a lot of people resist it because of the needles. And I don't care what people say, you never get used to the needles. Ever.
No, I think I'm doing it myself at home.
Did you do your own needles? Oh, no, brave lady.
No, honestly, after the first, I thought it would be the worst bit, be the needling. After the first, I'm not saying didn't screw it up a few times, but... It was the setting the machine up that was the massive pain in the ass. So the needles you sort of got used to, and on my leg at least, it's kind of numbed, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, the skin does go numb when, because obviously the nurses needle me. Sometimes they do it and I don't feel it at all. And it's like, that's good. But then it's like, they must have gone in a really well-used place, which means it's going to bleed like stink at the end.
That's one of the worst things. I sat crying for like 2 hours. It's still not.
Yeah.
And which, if you're on any kind of blood thinners or anything like that, it's bloody nuisance. But
touch wood, it's not happened since I've gone back on. But I definitely had days the last time where it just would not stop.
No, and then it's not a 4-hour process, which it isn't anyway, obviously. No. Just, especially with yourself having to, which I have done, get to the hosy, wait, get put on the machine, get took off the machine.
It ends up being the whole day, doesn't it?
It's the day, and you're knackered anyway. So, yeah it's not much fun. Home dialysis, because you could do it sort of 6 times a week if you wanted, get up early and do it. Take a bit more fluid off, eat a bit more different foods and stuff.
See,
it's good.
I'm currently not interested in home dialysis.
No,
but I don't think my graft would tolerate being needled every day.
Yeah.
And I don't know how people do it overnight.
Oh, I only did the peritoneal overnight. I couldn't do the dialysis, the home hemo at home overnight because A, it was like, it was in a separate room, and B, I didn't like the idea of it, and I don't think I would have been able to sleep anyway, so.
No, I can't sleep during dialysis. It doesn't matter what's going on.
Yeah.
Everyone else is snoring. I'm usually in a room of old men. They're all asleep.
As of course.
And, but not me. Not me. I'm the awkward one that can't sleep. But you worked during while you were on dialysis.
I did. Not the first time. The first time I was poorly and just sort of getting used to the whole thing. In between the first and the second, it was only 9 months. So I started uni.
Yeah.
And I had been at university before it failed initially. And then when it failed, it was just like, oh, you know, leave that. Luckily, it was in the days where I didn't have to pay fees. So it was one of those. But after the second one failed, I was in the hospital talking to somebody and she made stuff. So she did crafty stuff, you know, brooches and stuff like that out of clay. And she's just like, you just need to do something, you know, to keep you going and make your money, because it's really hard sometimes, not always, but to work and for someone else and dialyze, because my graft used to clot every 3-4 weeks, and then I'd be back in the hospital. So I made chilies and chutneys, that sort of thing. I got a grant from the Prince's Trust, and they were excellent. Introduced to people who were like mentors and stuff. So I was able to set up quite a good thing that kept me going and going to food festivals and stuff like that. Not like always easy, but I was quite young and I did have people like my mum, my dad, my friends that would help me out. And then a deli came up in Frodsham and I thought that would be better. That would be nice. So it was rent, you know, it was rent. And so I got that and I had that for 7 years and sort of still doing the chutneys and the chilies, but mostly doing catering for sort of corporate business, you know, sort of business buffets, that's things. And I'd dialyze of a morning. It was when I was dialyzing in the hospital. Come back to the shop, if I was dizzy or I didn't feel right, I could just sit with my face on the breakfast bar and someone would, you know, be working.
Yeah.
There was people that worked for me that were excellent and knew what, probably more than I did about what we were doing. So it was just a way of, yeah, that was my kind of way of dealing with the dialysis and the sort of, I suppose I was still quite young, so I was 28, 29, something like that. So could probably tell the difference now. I could certainly tell the difference when the third kidney failed because there's knackers and everything gone to shit. but at that particular time, it was something that kept me going. And then after the third transplant, I made the decision, like I say, to sort of sell everything and just do this shelter. It only takes 6 weeks and then go abroad and teach English as a foreign language. It's like an extended jolly, really.
Well, I'm a bit like that. When I got my transplant, it was like, right, when are we going on holiday? Wannabe not here.
This is an excellent place to be.
Yeah.
It's, I think it was just, it's hard. It's hard to sort of travel on dialysis, even though you can.
Yeah,
it's not exactly a picnic.
We used to do long weekends, and I dialysed. I dialysed abroad once.
How was that?
That was fun. That was in Turkey. Yeah. It was lovely.
But really?
But I had a neckline.
Yeah.
So fine, easy peasy.
Different with
needles when they don't speak the language.
I understand. We did in Sorrento, they have one, and Palma. Mm. And they were very good. They were very good. It was a bit surreal. It was just like all old people. And when I say old, I mean like ancient.
Oh, there was a guy rolled up at the one we were at, rolled up on a tractor to get his wife in
I'd
there.
Like to do that. Yeah,
and but they had the best food, and they had a swimming pool for the patients and everything. It was lovely. Not that I used it, but yeah, it was lovely. But on a neckline is different.
Yeah,
definitely. Especially when you've got an awkward one to stick needles in.
I was going to say, it depends on how easy. I think mine was not tricky. Nobody found. There's one nurse that didn't like it. I think she had a bad experience.
Oh, there's always a nurse. We won't name names. I know you're listening, but there's always a nurse that doesn't want to do your needles.
Because once you've blown it a few times, you just think, do you know what? I don't want you to do it either.
Yeah, basically. I don't want them to do it if they're nervous about it, because then they will mess it up. And mine, if you go in certain places, you have to push hard to get the needles in, because it's old and covered in scars, and you have to push hard, but then you have to be able to stop before you go through the other side, don't you? Yeah, exactly. It's making you feel sick even thinking about it. But
you forget.
Sometimes they have to push so hard. I'm sat there gritting my teeth. If Steve's there, he's gritting his teeth. We're all gritting our teeth. So
it's not ideal. It's far from ideal.
So now you run the fabulous food tours around Chester, one of my favourite cities. Why don't you tell us about that?
When I got back from my exploits because kidney had failed. not by choice. I don't have that many transferable skills because I sort of never finished a degree.
I finished a degree and I'm still useless. Don't worry.
I don't think I would have used it. It was creative writing and poetry, so I'm not sure what you do with that. But there was lots of opportunities for sort of TA work or cover supply. They would literally take anybody. No offence to all those schools everywhere, but literally take anybody, including me. So I did cover supply for maybe 3 weeks and then just thought, yeah, no, I don't like this. And then I met my ex-partner, and he was interested in doing the Chili's. Sorry, I've gone off on one. So I did the Chili's again with my ex-partner. Then that went well, blah, blah, blah. I was on dialysis then, had my fourth transplant. And then sort of once I'd had my fourth transplant, I'd had a year off because we sold that business.
You got called quite quickly for that one, didn't you?
Very quickly. I was called for it before. I knew I was going on the list, and before I'd had the letter to say that I was back on the transplant list, I'd had a call because they'd said before, you know, it's very unlikely. I've got a complicated anatomy, and it's very unlikely that
it gets messy in there after all the surgeries.
It did, and so my blood pressure was 40 over 60, which my body had actually gotten used to, but they were very, certainly anaesthetists weren't keen to do it. And also it would involve a cadaver lift. I had to be somebody fit and healthy and no medical issues and young. And it was just one of those. Yeah. So I'd say you were lucky, you know, in somebody, obviously it involved somebody else losing their life, but I got it very quickly. I got the letter about 4 days after the transplant. So few issues with it for 18 months, and then it's been great. So when I was well enough, like felt well enough to work again, I did try the teaching again for a while, but it's just rubbish. I just hate it. I don't hate the kids. I just hate the whole shebang. I did a little bit of permanently expelled children, and I don't dislike the kids, like I say, a bit sassy for a couple of weeks, but it's just, A, it's really boring for me, in the, you're not a real teacher, you know, you're not planning anything or whatever. It's just sort of repetitive. And also, again, if I was under the weather or whatever, I was letting people down. So in the end, I spoke to a guy who runs a food tour in Manchester. I was looking for tour guide jobs. My uncle does it in Liverpool and it sounded good. So I thought, right, I'll look at that. I'll do something different. And yeah, I just looked up tour guide jobs, and Rob's is a food tour in Manchester called Scranchester.
I follow that.
He's excellent. He's excellent. He doesn't do much on socials. He doesn't like it.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, he still does really well. So, well, he does exceptionally well. So I worked for him for 3 years and, you know, I live in Chester. And so eventually talked to Rob and he was like, just try one and see how it goes. So I started at the end of September, sort of say officially kind of first couple of weeks of October, and just found different independents who were willing to do food and drink pairings. Most of them have designed like dishes for the tour, and also tried to make it a route where you went on the walls, you saw the river, you got to talk a little bit about the history and some weird stories and stuff. So I've had an inordinate amount of locals, Chester people, foreign, you know, sort of tourists as well, but lots and lots and lots of locals, and realise that nobody sort of knows their own city 100%. Some people more than others, but also get stuck in the kind of, you go to the same restaurant, you drink at the same bars.
Yeah.
And also loads of independents have been popping up in Chester, and it is a city that's still improving. They're doing everything they can to make it a proper tourist destination. So I just really love it. I love the independents that I go to. They're all...
And like, you know, I'm a massive foodie,
yeah,
obviously. But we've talked about how hard it'd be to run a kidney friendly tour, and or a wheelchair friendly tour in Chester. But
wheelchair is, it's difficult. Accessibility is not good in Chester. No. I've done it once. The lab was lovely. We had issues along the way. There was a fire at one of the places we were meant to go see that day, so we had to go somewhere else, and that 2 hours.
It's hard because it's such an old city, isn't it?
It is old, it's heritage, everything's grade listed.
Everything's lumpy bumpy.
It's lumpy for wheelchairs. Yeah. It's not ideal.
Kidney friendly could be doable, but then you expect people to know what they should and shouldn't be eating. But
all I think is, you know, if you were doing it, I could try and make it as kidney friendly as possible and a little bit of what you fancy and all of that. The issue might be the fluid allowance, you know, but people manage their own fluid allowance, don't they? I'd be okay. Yeah, kidney friendly food tour. So I think you could do it. Hillary got in touch, dietitian lady, and she might help me,
yeah,
have a look at a kidney friendly.
Oh yeah, Hillary from the Royal.
Hillary from the
Royal. Yeah, yeah. We're friends. She's coming to my birthday party.
She's very nice lady.
She's a very nice lady.
So that, you know, is something to look at. Certainly there's plenty of people on dialysis that love food. Food is a leveler. Everyone loves food.
Yeah.
And the people that I've been able to find are the people that are properly passionate about what they're doing, very passionate about their own business. And I think it's just nice for foodies. You get a little bit of a walk and a chat and just get to appreciate the city. At the moment, because it's sunny, it's even better. But even in horizontal driving rain, it seemed to work. Yeah. All right, because people always see...
I'm definitely going to find a way of coming on one of your food tours anyway.
We'll be away.
Yeah, we'll find a way. So, any advice for other patients?
I think in terms of like dialysis patients, if you're able, if you can find a way to work for yourself, much as it's a massive head stress, it can be quite, it drives you on. It, you know, you get passionate about it. and it gives you something to focus on. Even when you're under the weather, even when you're in the hospital, you know, if you've got anything in terms of, like you were saying before, any little niggle, you're feeling under the weather, you think, oh, this doesn't feel right, my body doesn't feel right, get it checked out, because the amount of times that I haven't and then it's gone too far and it's turned into a massive...
I was discussing with a neighbour the other day, where, because she did the same, she had something, she knew something was wrong, but waited and waited, thought, oh, go away, wait, and then ended up in hospital, as it always ends up,
Exactly, and you think, no, yeah, it should probably be fine, and then it's not. In terms of dialysis, I don't know, like I say, home dialysis does not suit everybody. If it is something that you're able to do, though, I would say it's not as... The needling isn't as bad as it sounds. Needling yourself isn't as bad as it sounds because you get used to your own... You can feel... I know, don't pull a face. It's just how I'm meaning, but it's all right. And just dialysis has its own, you know, its own challenges, but so does once you've got a kidney again. I think the main challenge is, okay, I've got to try and keep well. And then on the other side of things, you think, right, I must live my life and do all those things I couldn't do. So you still find yourself eating shit and having a few drinks and what have you. I think you've just got to find a balance and take some advice. But I used to find that with dialysis, if you stick to everything, if you do every single little thing you're supposed to do with your diet and this and that and the other, it becomes an absolute obsession rather than it being something really hard to say, oh, you know, dialysis is something that works around my life. But if it can be like that, then it's that much better.
It's better to work it around your life rather than, they always say, rather than work your life around dialysis. Yeah.
Definitely. So too many people like, oh, no, I don't go out, I don't eat bacon. I think certainly while you're on dialysis, you don't want to make yourself really sick and things like that, but every now and again, and even every day, if you want a bit of chocolate and you don't think it's going to cause massive issues, then I'd advocate, you know, I don't know, having a little bit of a...
You've got to have a little bit of what you like, otherwise what's the point?
Fancy.
What's the point otherwise?
There's no point. I know this is a food chat and it's very food. But I think in every respect, if you are able to, you know, keep well doing the stuff you're doing and everything like that, you know, is fantastic. It just takes the, I know it's very much kidney focused, but takes the focus away from it just being a dialysis patient and you're able to think, okay, so there's more to it than that. It's bloody hard, really. You know, you're doing it at the moment. It's not great. But I think that if you try and have this positive mental attitude.
Try and enjoy the bits in between, haven't you?
Enjoy the bits in between, the joy slithers and all of that. And make the most. Yeah. Then it's not the end of the world. It's just really hard. I think I've probably been lucky in that I've been able to carry on and had all these transplants and, you know, I can only look at it that way. And I'm sure a lot of people do with their experiences. But when I was on dialysis, you know, some days you are miserable and depressed and there's no two ways about it. Mm. It's miserable and depressing sometimes. But on the whole, I think, yeah, if you can, like say, enjoy the bits in the middle, that's the only advice I can give, medically speaking. No idea. Yes.
Well, well, thank you for talking to us today, Steph. It's been lovely having you on.
Absolutely.
It's been lovely having you on, and I shall see you on a food tour in the future.
We'll sort it. We'll chat.
Yeah, we shall. We shall indeed.
You talk to us, at your party. Have a lovely birthday.
I shall.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. See you later. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.